Keep hope alive, friends. Justice does exist. I have true faith that our institutions will hold and that we can move our dialogue about being a democratic republic forward and that we're going to be able to do this together. And I've got two experts for this entire hour to help us delve into these, I don't know, they sometimes seem very theoretical, but what they are very real questions for all of us every day in our conversations with coworkers, friends, and families, and in pews and on bar stools, as I like to say, in parks, and, you know, when we're walking the pavements. It is about you and the dialogue that we're having with one another. I've got two great experts. First, you know him very well as Marquette University Law School's polar extraordinaire, the one, the only, Mr. Charles Franklin. Welcome back to the program, Charles. It's great to have you with us this afternoon, sir.
Always great to be here. Thank you.
We're also joined this hour by Professor Barry Burton of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He is the director of the Elections Research Center and is the Lyons Family Chair in Electoral Politics. He's focused on civic engagement. Yes, I said civic engagement, which doesn't just mean in the voting box or in the ballot box, the voting booth, but how we collectively are engaging with the most important public policy debates and issues of our time. He looks at election administration, the actual process by which we cast our votes. He looks at public opinion polling, representation, and voting behavior. He is co-editor of The Measure of American Elections and author of The Personal Roots of Representation and a book that I am clearly going to be buying, Why Americans Split Their Tickets, Campaigns, Competition, and Divided Government. Welcome, Barry. It's great to have you, Professor.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Let's just jump right in. We are now looking at a mid-decade gerrymander, Professor Burton, and it is one that could fundamentally change the outcome of the balance of power in 2026. In terms of how the parties have been approaching this and the impact that this may have either to increase participation elections and voter engagement, civic engagement, or to really drive people away from the ballot boxes to disengage, where do you think this falls? Because, you know, a lot of people have been talking about the scourge of gerrymandering for a very long time. This seems to be sort of the apex of that problem.
Yeah, it's really the continuation of a lot of hardball politics. You know, when you've got very narrow majorities in the House and Senate, it's a few votes in the House. We're still waiting to seat one newly elected member from New Mexico who's a Democrat. Senate is a 53-47 margin. Each party is looking for a little edge it can give itself next year. And historically, the president's party would suffer in a midterm election. And this is an especially unpopular president. His approval rating is sitting in the low 40s in most surveys. You'd expect Republicans probably to lose the House and maybe be at risk in the Senate. So they're looking for seats. And this redistricting gimmick is the way to do it. I think it's going to help them just in terms of winning seats. They're likely to pick up five more in Texas if that's not struck down by a court. They're looking at Missouri and North Carolina and Indiana and some other states as well. Democrats are countering in California, but it's not going to be enough just in terms of the math. But I think it will energize some Democratic voters who are unhappy with everything that's going on in Washington. Some of them are going to be at the No Kings rally this weekend and other things, and they're looking for an electoral outlet to that. And the midterm election is a natural place where angry people show up and vote against the party in power. And, you know, layering on these redistricting gimmicks on top of everything else that Democrats are unhappy about, I think can only be motivating for them.
Do we end up with a House of Representatives that isn't representative of the vast majority, or certainly a plurality or a slightly over 50% that just isn't representative of where the majority of Americans are?
I'd say it's already that to some degree. Mm. You know, the makeup of the states is kind of strange and arbitrary. Every state gets two senators, whether you're little Wyoming with basically the population of Dane County, Wisconsin, is the whole state of Wyoming. They get two U.S. senators. California has 30 million people and gets two U.S. senators. So there's already a skew built in, and the drawing of districts, either intentionally or unintentionally, usually favors, in recent years, the GOP, though in the past, it sometimes helped Democrats. So this is going to stack it further, I think, and probably make congressional elections less meaningful if you can create more safe situations for one party or the other. There just aren't very many of these genuine swing districts that could go back and forth.
I hate safe congressional districts. I don't like them for Dems. I don't like them for the GOP because I think it makes elected officials more partisan, playing more to the tails of the bell curve, if you will, and frankly, just less responsive to their voters' true interests and concerns. Professor Franklin, I want to turn to you. There was so much fascinating insight in this newest poll. You put a poll out following the assassination of Charlie Kirk. You asked about political violence. You asked about the president's overall approval rating. You always do that. But you asked about confidence in institutions, in the Federal Reserve, in the Supreme Court. You talked about redistricting. Give folks a little bit of a top line of where sentiments are in this moment where we have had extraordinary, I think, dislocations, and both Democrats and conservatives are concerned about political violence.
Yeah, on political violence, I think the first thing is to say that 89% say political violence or violence for political purposes is never justified. So this is an overwhelming majority that on that measure oppose political violence, though 11% say maybe under some circumstances. But what's really striking is that when you ask who's more responsible for political violence, the left or the right, it's about evenly divided, and a small majority, 51%, say both sides are responsible. But when you look among Republicans, it's 53% that blame the left, only 4% that say the right is responsible. And when you look at Democrats, it's 51% blame the right and just 3% blame the left. By comparison among independents, 89% say both. And so this is really an example of how we see the flaws in our opponents very readily, but we don't see any problems on our own side. And it's just striking how large those gaps are and how mirror images Democrats and Republicans are of each other in just seeing the problem as being one on the other side, or substantially seeing the problem on the other side. On redistricting, we don't see much support for redistricting in the middle of a term to the middle of a census. Every 10 years, we do redistricting after a new census. But to do it now to maximize the party's strength within states that they have a majority, and usually almost always that means having control of both houses of the legislature and the governorship. That's what's allowing Republicans to redistrict in Texas and Missouri and North Carolina. Well, North Carolina is divided, but Indiana. And that kind of control at the state level has opened up the ability now, and now that there's will from the White House and from the parties, to maximize the party advantage. That really does upset the political balance for the rest of the decade, and of course threatens to make redistricting a biannual affair instead of a once a decade affair.
To the chagrin of every single person that has ever been responsible for trying to draw maps, I'm going to put my hand up and advise the Milwaukee County's Independent Redistricting Commission. It is really difficult to do. Professor Burden, let me kind of zoom out and ask a very, very high-level question. People seem to exist in their own information bubbles. Facts are rejected by folks on opposing sides of the aisle all the time. If people are existing in their own factual universes, whether perceived or real, and we have increasing polarization and a seeming willingness, I would say especially from the right, to lean into polarization, how do we continue to ensure that people are engaging? And that it's not just TikTok engagement, right? That it's not just the politics of soundbite. Because I think we could all agree, whether you tend to lean left or right, that politics and policymaking by whose soundbite does better on social media is not a good way to craft public policy or to answer some of the most challenging questions in our time, like immigration, public health, how to make public education effective, right? How to make sure that we've got a secure, insulated voting system, right? That we're meeting, again, foreign policy challenges. All of these things, they're complicated. They're not soundbite material, and yet that seems to be how folks are engaging.
Oh, you've asked a tough one here. This is a really difficult problem. I mean, it's maybe the number one umbrella problem facing American politics. How do we get out of the death spiral we seem to be in? There are some big ideas out there, like introducing more political parties, campaign finance reform, redistricting reform might be a smaller step along the way. Those things are probably not happening tomorrow. So it's a question of, you know, what can happen in the next election cycle that might engage people and have them believe in the effectiveness of the political system. I think there are a few ways of doing that. One is to remind people that previous elections have actually been meaningful and changed the direction of government. Whether you like the Affordable Care Act, which actually most Americans do, or you're unhappy with it now, it was an election that made that possible back in 08, and then it was subsequent elections that helped take pieces of it down. What's happening in Ukraine or Gaza or with Medicaid or anything else, those are all the results of elections. Here in Wisconsin, we really feel it. You know, a small change of 20,000 votes in a governor's election really sets the state in a different direction. So unfortunately, it's kind of knife-edge politics, very competitive and decided by small margins, but the elections are meaningful, and I think reminding people of that goes a long way.
Professor Franklin, we've got just about a minute left. I wanted to ask you this question. Overall, Donald Trump's approval ratings are pretty terrible. He's net negative by a margin. They have been sliding slowly, more negative. And yet, and many of his policies are viewed net negatively. And yet, Democrats also have a massive approval problem. First of all, let's correct the record on those facts very briefly. And then when we come back on the other side, we're going to deal with what I think is sort of, it seems like oxymoronic that both of these things are true at the same time. But Professor Franklin, if you can establish the facts of approval on either side of the aisle at this point.
Yeah, President Trump's job approval is at 43% in our national poll from last week. It's about 41% in most of the polling averages. That has trickled down from the high 40s since he first entered office. So it's not a collapse, but it is a steady, small decline from month to month. And on the party side, about 42% have a favorable view of the Republican Party, but that drops into the high 30s, about 36% favorable to the Democrats. And a lot of that comes from Democrats who are very disappointed with their party right now. Doesn't mean they'll vote against them, but it does mean the party has a problem with its base.
And therein lies the rub, folks. We're going to get into these conundrums on the other side with these two very smart gentlemen, Professor Burden of the University of Wisconsin at Madison and Professor Franklin of UW Law School, both of which are my alma maters, by the way. Stick with us, folks. We'll be back with more in just a moment.